It's back to the drawing board for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She's trying to put together a bipartisan select committee to investigate the January 6th insurrection. Earlier this week, Pelosi rejected the appointments of two Republicans, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio and Jim Banks of Indiana. They were both nominated by House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. Here's Pelosi.
They have made statements and taken actions that I think would impact the integrity of the commission, of the committee, the work of the committee.
McCarthy called the move a, quote, egregious abuse of power and threatened to pull all five of his nominees from the committee.
Well, it's Friday, so let's add that subject to our weekly politics roundtable. This week we have Maya King, politics reporter for Politico. Hi, Maya.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and Margaret Tolove, managing editor for politics at Axios. Margaret, welcome to you as always.
Hi, Robin. Great to be with you.
And we just heard Speaker Pelosi say that Republicans Jim Jordan and Jim Banks, have statements and actions that would impact the work of the committee. She's now considering adding outspoken Republican Trump critics, including Congressman Adam Kinzinger. Margaret, start with you. What's the talk about this? We also hear people saying maybe she should have kept a firebrand like Jim Jordan on the committee so people could see what they say is his disregard for January 6th. What's the chess play here?
I think Pelosi just took a look at kind of the pregame that Representatives Jordan and Banks were sharing, seeking sort of publicly to invalidate the premise of the committee or the scope of their work to begin with, or to say that the real thing that should be investigated is Pelosi, or that somehow, you know, Democrats were responsible for supporters of former President Trump storming the Capitol in a violent way that led to death. So I think her decision at that point just reflected her view that the committee would turn into a circus, and that she already had one Republican on the committee because she had appointed that Republican. That's Liz Cheney from Wyoming. And she just pulled the plug on it and said, the ball's in your court. We know what McCarthy did next. And so ever since then, the question has been, could she take those five slots that would have been McCarthy's to appoint, that he's now said, no, I'm not going to appoint anyone, and fill those with other Republicans, fill any from, you know, one to five of the, well, I guess it's not, she'd remove two. Mm-hmm. This is, I'm getting in the weeds now, but yes, there are five mm-hmm. spots now that she could fill, or could she just, does she not need to do any of that, or could she do something in the middle? Like, for practical purposes, I'm not sure that it matters. She still has a committee. There is still a Republican on the committee, whether Republicans think Liz Cheney counts or not, and the committee still has subpoena power because the Democrats are in control of the House. Will it be viewed as partisan by Republicans? Yes. Would it have been viewed as partisan by Republicans anyway, even if those five Republicans that McCarthy pulled had served? Yes. And does Pelosi have the ability to unearth or put on record some new facts if the committee is sort of controlled and sticks to substance and manages not to go off the rails in some Democratic partisan way? Yes, all those things are possible. So at this point, that's her calculation. And really, the only question is how many Republicans want to sign on against Kevin McCarthy's wishes?
Well, Maya, no love lost between Jim Jordan and Liz Cheney. It would have been interesting to see that unfold. But briefly, do you want to add anything to what we just heard?
Well, I think also what we're looking at here is Pelosi saying that she really doesn't want to politicize this as much as it has increasingly become a political issue, that indeed people died on January 6th, and that people, particularly voters in 2022, are owed some kind of an explanation for the role that the former president and Republicans have played in stoking tensions ahead of it, which I think plays into why you're seeing this tension now on the Hill. It would be very difficult to include people on this commission who actively played a role in the events leading up to January 6th.
Yeah. Let's move on to another big topic of discussion in Washington, and that's infrastructure. The infrastructure bill faced a setback in the Senate. There was a failed vote that could have begun debate on the spending package. Democrats say that's not the end of this. And then earlier this week, Biden was asked about whether he'd attempt to end or change the filibuster. That could affect whether this infrastructure bill gets a vote or even debate. So, Maya, what are we to think here about the future of this infrastructure bill?
Well, I think Democrats will come away having passed something. There will be another vote probably early next week. But it seems, though, that many, including those on the left, are kind of gritting their teeth and going ahead to support this bill. There's just been a lot of back and forth. Obviously, it's been infrastructure week in Washington now for like the last 3 months. And so there's also just this feeling, I think, among many on the Hill that they have to do something and have something to show for all of these conversations that they've been having. And I don't think it's also, I think it's worth noting here the fact that a lot of these discussions are taking place against the backdrop of crumbling infrastructure in this country. I think just in the last month, we've seen a number of disasters on that front. And so Democrats are also under some pressure here to deliver, not just to show bipartisanship, not just to kind of be all on one accord here and follow the lead of the White House, but also to fix some really immediate problems that they'll have to answer for, especially on the campaign trail next year.
Well, you know, I just want to ask a little more about infrastructure because, you know, Biden has said, you know, he doesn't want to change the filibuster. And as we know, it saw a setback this week because it had that failed vote that would have begun debate on the spending package. That's the filibuster. You know, talk about that insistence on Biden's part. For instance, an example would be voting rights. With the filibuster, it would need 60 votes to pass, but by carving out a civil rights exception to the filibuster, it would just need a simple majority. Biden's loath to do that. He wants bipartisanship. Here he is in an exchange with Don Lemon on a CNN town hall in Cincinnati earlier this week.
So why is protecting the filibuster, is that more important than protecting voting rights, especially for people who fought and died for that?
No, it's not. I want to see the United States Congress, the United States Senate, pass S1 and S4, the John Lewis Act, get them to my desk so I can sign them.
So, Margaret, you know, this is some heat on President Biden.
You know, it is, but honestly, Senators Manchin and Sinema are making it really easy for Biden to take this position, because even if he said, yes, I believe we need to do away with the legislative filibuster in the Senate tomorrow, like, the support inside the Democratic caucus doesn't actually exist to do it. Literally, he can't do it. There's no way to do it. So what you hear Biden talking about is things like he would support the talking filibuster, which is like, you know, if when you learn about the filibuster in school and it's like people stay up all night and they read Green Eggs and Ham, like that is what used to happen. There would be a lot less filibusters if people had to do that again and like couldn't go to the bathroom and had to read a book at 3 a.m. And, you know, so that's where he's focused his effort. I think because the support to end the filibuster doesn't exist, even if he decided that he wanted to do it. Interestingly, I think on the infrastructure front, I think we still are more likely than not to get some kind of a bipartisan deal out of it. You've seen the Republicans who are part of that bipartisan deal come forward now at the end of the week and say, like, look, oh, by Monday, we actually might have something. This is around $600 billion dollars in new spending. And they know that if they don't pass it, the Democrats are going to tack it on to their budget reconciliation bill anyway. I think if you're in Washington looking at this up close, it's like one of those abstract paintings where it just looks like a bunch of crap thrown on a piece of canvas. But if you take a few steps back, like even this smaller bipartisan deal that they're trying to salvage, it's a lot of money. It's compared to no money. It is a lot of money. And a lot of Republicans are invested in getting at least the beginnings of some infrastructure spending going. So I think we don't know how long exactly this is going to take. It could stumble again on Monday, but they are really, really into the nitty gritty, pulling tax proposals out, replacing it with delaying a Medicare thing that Trump wanted to do that will come up with the money. So there really is an effort right now among that bipartisan group to try to salvage that $1.2 trillion deal, about half of which is new money. And we may see some progress early next week.
Well, let's turn to the pandemic. Nearly half of House Republicans won't answer the question of if they're vaccinated or not. Some Republicans are not only disclosing their vaccination status, though, they're encouraging the public to get the shot. Earlier this week, House Minority Whip Steve Scalise announced he got his, urged Americans to do the same, and here is Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
These shots need to get in everybody's arm as rapidly as possible, or we're going to be back in a situation in the fall that we don't yearn for, that we went through last year.
So I wonder, Maya, do you think that at this point these kind of conservative voices could sway Americans who right now are not willing to get the vaccine?
You know, I think about that, and I see lawmakers talking about this finally on the right who are weighing in on getting the shot. And I also think about the fact that Fox News and more conservative media are finally also starting to weigh in. And I find that to be one of the more effective tools here, because that's where a lot of the folks who have been reticent to get the shot, members of Trump's base who listened to him when he originally said that COVID was a hoax, and also kind of stoked a lot of tension and just insecurity around the shot. I think the same people who elevated that, a lot of the outlets that sort of gave voice to that, should also be those that are weighing in on this or elevating the counter.
Right. Maya King covers politics for Politico. Margaret Talev is managing editor for politics at Axios. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Les.